You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, America, and welcome to America's Web Radio and the exclusive, and we say exclusive, Dan and Dave show because we couldn't get on any place else, so we had to start our own radio station, and that's how we have a job. But fortunately, you don't have to just listen to Dan and Dave today. We've got a very good-looking special guest that is contributing to the safety. Well, I think the safety, maybe, I don't know, maybe I better think that over. Sort of the safety of the women's world, and happens to be Carrie Lightfoot, and she has a business called The Well-Armed Woman. So, good morning, Dan, good morning, Carrie, and welcome to America's Web Radio.
Good morning, glad to be with you guys.
Top of the Monday morning to everybody. Looking forward to this program.
It should be good. Carrie, we sort of like to talk about current events, so we'll take care of that quickly. Football, that's it. Now on to Carrie. I don't want to sound like a loser from the South, but we won't go into any gory details. We try not to mention bad things, so we'll just move right on and go right into.
I think Cam Newton would have had a great football game had it not been for the Denver defense. Man, the Denver defense showed me a lot of stuff last night. I couldn't believe it.
Now that
was
all over Cam Newton.
That's a statement from a Texas Tech graduate. Except for the Denver defense, that was pretty dumb, really. Of course it was the Denver defense. If it hadn't have been for the Denver defense, Cam would have run over you. So there you go. Duh.
Denver didn't have much offense, did they?
Well, you know, Peyton's running out of juice. But for 39 years old...
He's a good guy. He looked a little tired.
Oh, yeah. But he did good. Anyway, let's get on with this. I'm excited about today and having Carrie on. I called her the other day. We met on LinkedIn, I guess. I guess you say you meet on LinkedIn. I don't know the exact term, but I saw one of her posts or whatever and decided it would be good to call and find out more. So, Carrie, you started this business several years ago, and I know if everybody goes to the webpage, which happens to be, Carrie, and this is your... I'm pointing at you. The web page for your business is
www.thewellarmedwoman.com.
And it is a terrific website, and I'd invite anybody and everybody that's listening, if you have computer access and you can go to it while we're talking, you should. There is, as I went through it, there's a thing about how you got involved. So instead of going to the website and making Dan Reed, which he's still doing it one word at a time. Tell us about how you decided to get into this. Well, it is. Even over here. So how did you decide to start a women's armed business?
Well, you know, I mean, for me, I came to gun ownership later in life. My youngest of four children was getting ready to go off to college, and I had taken a job working with those struggling with poverty and homelessness, which took me to a tougher part of town. And so, really, naively, for the first time in my life, I felt vulnerable. It's like, well, what would I do? You know, who's here to protect me? I was a single mom. And so, you know, the wheels started turning in my head that I needed to kind of take responsibility and figure out how I would protect myself. And so that resulted in me exploring different options, and obviously a firearm was one of those. And as I did that, I was very frustrated at the lack of resources that spoke to me as a woman, that helped me through my personal kind of journey. So in thinking it through, I really believed that I knew I wasn't the only woman out there who had questions similar to mine or concerns or needed answers, and I just felt that but since it didn't exist out there, that something and someone needed to do something. So I kind of set my sights on starting the company. I love business. I've had a lot of different involvements in different companies and different adventures, if you will. And so that part didn't intimidate me at all. So it really was about getting trained and then providing the resources for other women. And really my focus is to be very respectful, very common sense. It's not my mission to put a gun in the hands of every woman, but it is my mission to create the environment and the place where women can go and feel respected and get the information that they need. You know, the industry is such a, or has been, such a male-dominated one, naturally. I mean, that was the major consumers were men. And so I just felt that we needed our own place where we could find information we needed. So started the website in January of 2012, and it has been an incredible ride. There has been so much activity and so much growth, and the timing was right. And we just keep kind of growing and expanding as needs arise or questions arise. We work really hard to address them or provide the resource for women to go get those answers.
Dan and I both grew up in an agricultural area, and both of us sort of grew up with guns, and our family, our fathers both taught us how to use weapons. So, and a lot of, you know, I guess we all sort of in our age group sort of came from the we kill it, you cook it type era, and that's what you even saw on television. I gather you didn't grow up in a family, or let me ask, was your family, when you were growing up, was your father involved with weapons at all?
No, not at all. I grew up in the suburbs of New York City, and so...
Oh, there are a lot of weapons there, aren't there?
Guns were just not a part of my world, and as a young mother raising my children, you know, I naively, or in my ignorance, you know, I just had a fear of them, and so I was the mom that didn't want any guns in the house. My boys, I have two boys, you know, they didn't play with guns. I mean, you know, in hindsight, I look back and giggle, you know, that here's the well-armed woman who, you know, didn't have any guns in her house. And I kind of joke that the first gun that made its way into my home was the Duck Hunt game in the Nintendo game. So I just, you know, I wasn't anti-gun. I just had, you know, kind of an ignorance about them and was just fearful and didn't want anything to do with them. And so obviously that changed, and I think a lot of women are fearful. They don't understand firearms. They don't know how they work. You know, we just kind of see them as, something to use that can kill. And I think for many women, that's why the information is so important. And women will make great decisions. They just need the information. They can make their own judgment call. They can make their own decision. I just want them to do that in an educated way, not in a fearful way. But, yeah, no, guns were not a part of my world.
Dave, we both have two sisters, and I had my oldest sister loved guns, and she gravitated towards a pump-action .22. Which we still have. I still keep it for in my gun safe. The other sister, I think she was too enamored with boys to really pick up a gun. And with her temper, she probably would have shot some of the boys that she dated. But the oldest sister, she really loved to hunt. She loved guns. She loved plinking and target shooting of all kinds. Did your sister, Dave, have the same proclivity?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. My older sister learned to shoot about the time that I did, and, you know, sort of got away from it. I don't know that she's ever been to a rifle range, but she lives on a pretty good chunk of land, and she and her husband, they're getting a little old, but they did do some shooting on their place. And then my younger sister... actually was never into it much, but her husband was. And so, you know, within the past 5 or 6 years, I guess, not only has her husband taught their son how to shoot, but also my younger sister. So she goes to the range. And, you know, I don't I guess I'm of the feeling or philosophy that you don't have to go to the range every week or, you know, twice a month or whatever. But I like I've taught my wife, she knows what to do if she were to hear something, if our alarms go off, and we do have a pretty well-protected house. But if she were there alone, she would know at least what to do, how to chamber around, and I don't know that she could necessarily hit anything, but she'd scare the hell out of them.
You know, that's the pathway for a lot of women, whether it's the influence, you know, of a husband or a boyfriend or a father, you know, who wants, at a minimum, for the women in their lives to know what to do in the event something happens, if there are guns in the home. And so we see that as kind of a pretty common journey for a lot of women. And usually what happens is they kind of get hooked, you know, once they become comfortable, you know, with that, they tend to kind of keep going and explore lots of different firearms, take trainings, get out there and shoot, and they really enjoy it. It's a great activity. It's a great recreational activity, and I'm a big believer, if mom's shooting, then the whole family is shooting, you know, whereas in the past it's been a dad, you know, dad would take the boys, you know, but when mom's shooting, everybody's shooting, and that's just good. That's good for our future Second Amendment rights. It's good for the industry, and it's just good. Good stuff there.
We were very fortunate, too, and Dan, you remember this. I had a place in the mountains that off our back deck we could shoot skeet, and that's where I taught boys how to shoot, and each of them had their own shotgun, and we'd go up almost every weekend from the time they were, I guess they were about 8 or 9, something like that. One boy was 9 and one was 7 or whatever, but they learned how to shoot, and my older son that's a CPA is an excellent shot and has quite a collection of weapons. My younger son is a captain in the Air Force, and he has some collection of weapons that I'll never get to play with, but he's quite a marksman as well in many areas, so... I'm very fortunate, one captain and one CPA, and they both know how to shoot, and I'm sure without a doubt, well, my older son's already taught his wife, and I'm sure my younger son will, if he's ever at home anytime, he'll teach his wife. So you had this idea to start this business. What did you do next? How did you say, you can't just... say, poof, I'm going to be in the women's armed business or arms business. So what was your next step, and how did you get folks, women, initially interested, Carrie?
Well, you know, I really did kind of dive in. We added the product component, which, you know, for women, there at the time, it's better now, but there were, you know, no options that were for women. So I designed a couple of holsters that fit a woman's body, which for obvious reasons, there's a lot of differences, and so that really kind of took off as a really needed resource that women were very happy to find in one place. And I do a lot of videos on the holsters, and I just kind of demo them, talk about the pros and the cons, because I know personally how hard it is to make those decisions from a distance, you know, when you can't see it and try it and touch it, you know, as most stores don't carry much in the way of women's holsters, although that's changing. We're seeing that change too. And after the first year of really engaging with women from all over the country, the next step became really clear, which was creating an opportunity for women to get together and shoot together. So many women were wanting to shoot, a little uncomfortable, perhaps intimidated, going to the range by themselves. So we started a program that is our Women's Shooting Chapter program in February, maybe that was January of 2013, so a year later. And that program has as well as exploded. It's a phenomenal program where we have volunteer chapter leaders all over the country. And we just create a women-friendly, comfortable environment where they can ask their questions comfortably and not feel the intimidation, and then go on the range and practice together.
Carrie, I've got to interrupt you. We've got to take a hard break. Let's get back to this in just a second, right after our break. We'll be back after this.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren. On Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we do thank you for listening to the Dan and Dave show. It looks like, Dan, that our begging for people to listen is finally paying off. We've got, I think, like the Democrats, we have about 25% are dead, and then the other 75%, well, part of those are in jail, but... We are gaining an audience, so our begging has worked. What can I say? And I'm sure.
Well,
that,
I hate to pop your bubble, but the third person that's listening is actually our guest.
That's right. That's
so
right.
The three of us that are here are actually listening.
And if you don't do a good job, I've already given her your address, Dan. And she's
you
not.
You know, as a Carrie, as a media personality. There's a lot of nefarious characters that are just naturally interested in what I do, and they follow me. And so I'm thinking, I don't need a gun, but what I need is a well-armed woman to escort me. Are there any armed escort services that you know of?
We have well-armed women in every state of the country. Our chapter program that we were talking about is in 49 states with South Dakota. We're working on that. We almost had one go in there. But
well, there's only two women in South Dakota.
So we're everywhere. We're about 8,000 strong and 277 chapters, I believe, across the country.
Wow. You told them all to listen in today?
They're all listening, or they will be if they're not.
That's great.
That was mandatory. Okay, so you've got I was amazed when talking off air, you were mentioning the fact that you started this and the applications just came in like crazy. That's incredible and obviously a need.
There was a real need, and we're kind of no frills. I mean, it's serious business, but it's a comfortable setting for women, and I think that's what they're hungry for is to not be intimidated, to feel comfortable to ask questions, to learn together as women. You know, I mean, women, one of the big differences, and there are some significant differences between men and women outside of body shape and things like parts and things like that.
Did you go to Texas Tech too? That was sort of a Texas Tech statement. There are differences between men and women?
Nope.
That's a graduate level course, Dave. You missed that one.
I missed it, yeah, I did.
but women are very relational, and we live our lives out kind of together and in community with one another. So this kind of program, I think, was just a real natural fit, and I think that's part of the reason it's been very, very successful. The other key ingredient is our chapter leaders. We have the most incredibly gifted, passionate women, about 600 of them across the country, that are trained and they're leading these meetings across the country, and they are the fuel. I mean, these ladies work really hard to make the meetings informative, and we invite guest speakers in, guest trainers, so there's always always something new and exciting and focused on growing them farther, you know, helping women grow. And they really are they're the fuel of this whole thing, and that program is a 501c3 nonprofit organization now.
Carrie, what are your demographics?
You know, we really run the gamut. I mean, women of all ages, you know, from younger women, college entrants, that kind of thing, all the way up into the late 80s. The main chunk is probably 35 to 55 is probably the greatest group that we reach. Although we, as I said, we just had a woman, one of our chapter leaders just received her instructor certification this weekend, 73 years old, and I just love that. It just makes me all, you know, excited and proud that that to see women just get on a goal and follow it through regardless of the age. So we have a lot of women who are maturing, and you know, when I speak, I talk about the target on women's back, and we're born with it. I mean, just as women, the violent crime is perpetrated against women, the majority of it. So we just walk around with this target on our back. And as we grow older, and I'm starting to even feel those things, I mean, that target gets bigger and bigger. We become, you know, weaker. We move a little slower, and we perhaps have some disabilities or things like that. And that target keeps growing and growing. So to see women shrinking that target by becoming equipped and trained to protect themselves, it's an amazing thing, and we're excited to see so many older women kind of taking their lives back.
So
education is your primary mission.
Yeah, I've always had, I have three guiding purposes, and that's to educate, equip, and empower. So we have a real strong educational component. Women have to be informed and educated. A responsible gun owner is an educated one, and one that trains and that understands the laws, the ramifications, the seriousness of the choice to own a firearm or to carry a firearm. So those three things really guide everything that that we do.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Do you...
Exciting times.
Just briefly, like I said, I have your website up on streaming live on our website. Where do you it's, and I think this, a lot of gun stores and other folks have realized the importance of what you're doing, because a woman walks in and what do I need? And obviously the difference between what I carry or what Dan carries or we have or whatever would be different from a woman, and there's a lot to be said about being able to get to it quickly, and if you're going to carry, using it and know what to do with it. So how do you, you know, I guess give us a start, or where do you start, and where are you trying to go with the woman that says, I know nothing about guns, help me?
Right. Well, there's a really key page on our website, which is where do I begin, where to start. And that page, you know, I designed that page to kind of be a stepped process and to walk women through, I think it's three stages of exploration and question asking and things like that. And I think for a woman, the stage one, which is really, do you need it? And do you at your deepest levels really believe that you need it, because that's important. Because if you don't believe you need it, then there's something casual about that, and that's just probably heading down a path that probably isn't ideal. And then also about whether they could use it or not. Women, you know, we're life givers and we're nurturers. Our gender is just the nurturing gender, and so for many women, the reality or the potential of having to use your firearm and pull the trigger on another human being can be a hurdle, and so it has to be explored, and each of us, men and women included, have to be at that place where we can say, you know what, if I had to, if my life depended on it, or my child's life, and you don't want to get between a mother bear and her cub, right? I mean, but we have to know that we can do it if we needed to. And so we just kind of walk them through some steps, and at the end, you know, once they get through those steps, they can confidently say, you know what, I am prepared and willing to make the commitments necessary to own a firearm and train with it and use it properly and be a good law-abiding gun owner.
I was.
I like the way you've broken down your stages: stage one, stage two, and stage three. I'm learning something here. I'm kind of quiet, but I'm reading, and this is great information for men or women.
I was at a.
My goal is to create really educated, informed, and well-trained women who can take care of themselves. And so that involves some commitments. That involves some things. I call it like it's a package deal. You can't just buy a firearm and then you're ready to go. You're not, and you're not equipped to protect yourself. You have to be committed to proper training. You have to be committed to know the laws. Because when a gun owner doesn't do those things, then all of us, you know, our rights are at a higher level of risk, and others around us are. So it really is a package deal, and so it's important to make sure that we all, you know, men, women, youth, whatever, that we all understand the responsibility that we're assuming.
You said something a minute ago about whether a person could use it if the situation demanded. I was at a meeting the other night I don't know if you know the name Tonto Peranto, but he was one of the special ops that was at Benghazi, and he was giving a talk, and he said, you know, one of the questions that's most asked of him, and we have changed our society so much. Obviously, with the volunteer military, there are more people now that haven't been in the military or exposed to military action than ever before. And he said the most frequent question that he gets as they were attacking, people would ask, well, how could you decide to kill someone? And he said, you know, when the first bullet goes past your head, you realize that person is trying to kill you, and you go into a mode. And he said he's seen this. He was in the service for 20 some odd years in special ops, and he said you go into a not a mood, but just a reactive state that they're trying to kill you, and they're not people anymore. They're targets, and you do what you have to do, and it's self-preservation.
Well, if you were them, you know, it becomes a you or them.
Yeah, exactly.
Situation. And I think it's important to walk through those. I mean, we talk about what-if scenarios and things like that to kind of create that bullet going by the head, you know, that wow. You know, and we have to think those things through because you can't figure it out in the moment. In the middle of attack, you can't go, oh, can I or can't I? You know, that's not the time to figure that out. That has to happen, you know, beforehand and using kind of what-if scenarios and kind of forcing women to get into the really ugliness of violence. What would I do if that were me? I think it's an important part of the process.
Right now, we've got to stop on that and take another break. You're listening to America's Web Radio, the Dan and Dave Show. We'll be back right after this.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key. And the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to the Dan and Dave Show on America's Web Radio. Our special guest is Carrie Lightfoot today from The Well-Armed Woman. And let's see, you've got one weapon in your right hand, one in your left hand. And what's that between your teeth, Carrie?
I don't know where you're looking.
I thought maybe it was a blow dart. It was a blow dart or something like that. No, anyway, Carrie, we do appreciate you being on today. And the women that are listening in, I hope they appreciate what you're doing. And let me ask, without getting into politics, do you think the necessity is growing for women to be armed and to know how to handle a weapon?
I think the necessity, like I said, we're born with that target on our back, and women, all women, walk through their lives with those fears, you know, leaving a parking lot or leaving a store, walking through a parking lot, walking down a street. We carry that with us 24/7. So the need is there, and it's more a matter of awareness and then making a choice of whether I'm going to take responsibility for my own protection or not. But politically, the need is growing. It is so important for women to be involved and engaged, because we have such a powerful story to tell. Because we're talking about protecting ourselves, and you know, if the politicians and the media kind of focused on the truth of what that means for women about protecting ourselves and our children and our families, a lot of people that are kind of unsure in the middle would have a better understanding. And I think they avoid the topic, actually, because it is a powerful, emotionally charged subject, you know, that of a woman defending herself from rape or attack. But I think that's a very, very important and powerful message that will influence legislation. So it's really important for women to get educated and understand what's happening in their communities, what's happening across the country. We can't tune out and say, oh, well, that's California, that doesn't affect me. We have to really push that thinking off, and we have to look at it as potentially things that are coming our way. And it's an indicator of where some would like to see us head in terms of restrictions on our Second Amendment rights. And so I really want to see women engaged and out there speaking up and voting and educating the people around them, because so few really have an understanding. So few really have an understanding of the specifics of some of the legislation we see, the specifics of what some of the candidates are pushing for, and we have to really get into it. You know, we've got to dig into it, and it's our responsibility to. It really is.
So do you get into politics? Do you do any lobbying? either on the national level?
I don't. I see my role as more of a spokesperson and kind of a cheerleader, if you will, for women across the country. The chapter program is an educational nonprofit, so it's not a political entity, so we don't engage on any level on specific political issues. We engage in empowering women and getting women educated and involved in protecting their rights, but not on specific issues. On the Well-Armed Woman side, which is my company side, I can be a little more free. I'm a little more at liberty to push a little bit harder. And I just want to see change. I want to be a vehicle of change. I want to motivate people to think about things in a new way. And actually, something interesting had just happened, and I'm still kind of stirring about it. We had a mention in Cosmopolitan magazine, which is kind of a woman's mainstream magazine. And but what's interesting, and I think what I see as an accomplishment, is that, and it wasn't negative. It was a mention about the popularity of concealed carry purses or something like that. But what that means is that if we can bring that conversation to the mainstream media conversation, that is a good thing. You know, that really is a good thing, because the more we mainstream it, the more people will think and engage and think about their options and start thinking about taking responsibility for their lives. So all of that to say is that it is important. It is important to keep talking, whether on political issues or just about gun ownership in general, with everybody around us.
Yeah, what you're doing demystifies the subject, and I think puts it out into the light where people can say, yeah, okay, I can look at that and understand why it's necessary perhaps for a woman to carry, but I don't think I need to carry, or make their own decision.
Even if it's a mention in a really more liberal type magazine, what happens is, if one woman sees that mention and just the conversation about concealed carry, she may think a little harder about it. She may start exploring. She may find the Well-Armed Woman website and start to make decisions for herself. That is powerful.
Well, tell me more about your chapters and how women become involved in your chapter. What does a chapter meeting look like?
Well, it is typically a two-part meeting. It's once a month. We have amazing host ranges all across the country. So each of these chapters is at a facility, at a licensed range. And the first part of the meeting is in the classroom. So that's an educationally focused, kind of topical discussion on whatever the topic of the month is. So we have lawyers will come in, or law enforcement, and talk about things that are important. We'll talk about safe storage, gun ownership with children, concealed carry issues, specific trainings. We do non-lethal trainings as well. Self-protection is a very comprehensive, kind of holistic need. It's not just about a firearm. So we spend that time in the classroom focused on whatever that topic is, and then the women go to the range together, and then they train. We try to keep it connected, thematic, so that whatever they were talking about or discussing in the classroom then gets carried out onto the range, so they can really really dig into some training that makes sense, if you will. So we do that, but we have our chapters do regional events and state events where they invite women just to come check things out. Guests are welcome. No one is forced to join. After the first meeting, they can come see if it's a good fit, if they like it, and then they can officially join after that.
Is there a charge or a monthly subscription fee to be a member?
The membership is an annual $50 fee.
So, reasonable.
And that 35% of that kind of remains set aside for local needs, for that local chapter's needs. And then we also have insurance. Insurance is a huge issue for an organization like this. So each chapter has its insurance policy. And then the administration and staffing and stuff like that. And scholarships, we do scholarships for women who have a need. We've just started a scholarship program for our leaders to further their training and certification. So we support our leaders and kind of invest back in them. And so that's how that works.
So are you talking strictly NRA certification or what kind of certification?
No, I mean, our goal, I mean, we foundationally an NRA pistol instructor certification is required. We want to encourage all kinds of different trainings to deepen their knowledge and their expertise. in defensive skill, shotgun. I mean, we move through a lot of different disciplines. So, but the NRA basic pistol really kind of is our foundational certification, if you will. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, we're open to whatever they can do to grow to be better instructors and better leaders. And so,
would you say your
program is membership only for women, or can somebody like Dave? It is for women only.
I could wear my kilts or something.
And we're not anti-men. We love men, and men are involved in our programming. I got a man now, so I mean, I like men, so we're not anti-men. But the whole purpose of it, you know, the whole goal is to create a really comfortable environment. And so we feel that keeping the membership as women only helps to support and kind of nurture a really comfortable environment. But we have, you know, men instructors that will come in and some of our RSOs, and so they play more of a supportive role in our programming.
You know, one of the things that I want to bring up, and I'm sure you all cover this continually, is that you never know. We live in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, and in a good neighborhood, and it just happened. I was walking outside. I worked out of my home at the time. And my wife had gone to the grocery store and had just pulled in the driveway, and a guy had followed her home. You never know. And I just happened to walk out at the right time and, you know, ask him what the hell he wanted. And he came up, well, I was trying to tell your wife or tell the lady that she had a low tire. Well, that was baloney. And it didn't take him long to take off. But you never know. You never know what the situation is going to be.
And we don't want to play on people's fears, but you never know. You don't ever know. And there is no safe zone anymore. You know, I mean, violence can even take an internal shape. You know, it can be someone you know. It can be anywhere in any neighborhood. And it's about being prepared. It's about situational awareness, paying attention. And that's just smart. That's not paranoid. That's just smart.
Do you think you'll ever expand your program into going into any portion of survival?
Sometimes there are meetings that talk kind of about being prepared, you know, in terms of tools and food and things like that. Probably not too heavily, but it is kind of part of the whole self-protection and being prepared discussion. So I do see that would be, part of the piece of it. But not a main focus.
Dan,
do you have a favorite handgun?
I have a couple. I have the Glock 43. I love that gun. I just got the Ruger SR9C. So that's my new endeavor right now, is digging into that gun, and I love the capacity of that, which is important, very important. And finding a firearm that fits smaller hands but has the capacity like that, I'm really hopeful that's going to be my new baby toy.
do you go into in your program? Do you go into cleaning and maintenance of weapons?
Oh yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
It's important. We encourage it. I mean, it's actually usually one of the first meetings. You know, kind of in the timeline. There's no better way to get to know your gun, and you have to. I see it like it's a relationship. You've got to know your partner intimately, and the only way to do that, and the firearm is your partner. It's your partner in self-protection. So I really encourage people to spend a lot of time with it, a lot of time handling it, cleaning it, taking it down, know everything about it. You want to know what that partner can do and what they can't do.
So do you require your members to have weapons of some sort?
No, I mean, eventually they end up with their own, but it's not required. You know, we have a lot of women who were at those very early stages and they're trying to find the right firearm for themselves, which is a huge question. It's a huge question. And so, where they can legally, they'll share and they'll try different guns. We try to, our instructors try to have different, a variety to help guide women to find the best fit for them.
I got to ask, is there a chapter in Portland and in Atlanta?
Yes, and I'm going to have to go look, because with 277, I don't know them all off the top of my head.
So,
on the chapter website, the Weller Woman Shooting Chapter's website, you can search by state,
mm-hmm.
and then it pulls up all of the chapters in that area, and then gives you the contact information for each.
There's six in Oregon.
There's 12 in Georgia.
Ah.
And we're going to have to take our final break. We'll be back with Carrie Lightfoot right after this.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to the Dan and Dave Show on America's Web Radio with our very special guest, Carrie Lightfoot from Arizona, and she is the founder of The Well-Armed Woman. And anyone that's listening that might have any thoughts, don't mess with Carrie. We'll just put that as a public service announcement.
Carrie, I've got to ask, and I don't know where this thought came from, but
you
can decline to answer, but do you have a tattoo?
No, I do not. I do not. My husband and I were just talking about it. He's like, maybe we should get tattoos. We have a fun name of two guns. So we're you know, one day you never know, although don't tell my kids because I gave them a hard time.
Okay.
Where did that question come from?
And I don't know where that question came from. I'm not sure I want to know.
I don't either.
I don't know. I was downtown yesterday, and I went past a couple of tattoo stores, and I don't have a tattoo, but I went in and looked, and maybe it was just kind of a subconscious thought that bubbled up. Hey, Carrie, my wife works in a children's hospital. And the dark side of guns is that sometimes innocent people get shot, and it can be accidentally. What do you say to parents who have a child that has been shot accidentally by a gun? How can they, you know, where do they go from there? It's a big guilt thing for them.
That is one of those heart-wrenching areas that causes everyone difficulty. You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
Whatever your leanings are, I mean, it's just painful. It's just a painful thing. I think the discussion has got to be, has got to be at the very beginning, at the responsibility level. And, as much as people may feel they have the right to own a firearm and want to have a firearm, they have to dig deep and make sure that they are willing to make the commitment. You know, the commitments, I mean, there really aren't accidents. It's negligence because, it only happens if one of the safety rules are broken. So we really have to dig deep and make sure that we are prepared to be responsible and make the commitments that are necessary to owning a firearm with children in the home. And a real level of honesty, because not everyone may be the perfect candidate for that. They may not be able to maintain the commitment of storage and safety. It goes back to the educational part too. There are tools, there are safes, there are, you know, methods of storing in your home with children and carrying with children, where we have to know what those best practices are and those best choices are and educate everyone in the home, anyone that comes into
once
the home.
Once the family makes a decision to own a firearm, you would probably say that everybody in that family needs to be educated no matter what
age. No matter what age, and there's tools to accomplish that, and responsible parenting and informing children and those in the home. I mean, there was a story not too long ago, and I believe it was a relative or something in the home that resulted in a child being shot. And if the people coming into your home can't be responsible, then they need to go away. You know, then the guns need to go away, and they need to be locked up in a safe.
Yeah, I'm looking at your website, and it would be nice to see a tab on here for children's safety or safety class for children or children's education.
Yeah, I mean, we do link to, the Eddie Eagle program. There is a page that is geared toward women making a decision of having a firearm in the home with young children at home. And so, but we do need to expand that. I'm actually working on that. You know, and that's... At my age, I didn't have the experience. I did not have guns in the home when my children were small. And so I'm reaching out to people that have that experience to help develop more resources in that area so that we can get some real experience, input, and advice.
Good. That's great. I just don't think that the man considers safety as much as a woman would for their children.
I think it's different. I think those differences. Yeah. Our brains operate differently, and as the life giver, as the nurturer, that really naturally falls into the realm where women, instinctively are concerned and thinking about safety. I don't think that that having a child means you can't have a firearm. It just means that you have to be responsible, you have to be educated, and you have to be committed to storing it properly. You know, leaving it out hidden up on top of something is not an option.
Yeah, that's well said.
I think you hit it on the head, though, when you said responsibility. I know too many young families and some older folks, too, that I'm not sure they should have kids, much less a pet even. they're not responsible for anything. And, We raised our sons where they have been responsible since they could walk and talk, and they knew that dad and mom meant business, and but the parent has to be responsible.
It is the parent's responsibility. It is solely the parent's responsibility to make sure all the bases are covered, and if they're not willing to do that, then they shouldn't have a firearm in the home with young children.
Absolutely. Carrie, your crystal ball has come to pass really very quickly for a startup business, and you walked in right into a need and a demand, and you fill that need and the demand. Where do you see in your crystal ball the well-armed woman going tomorrow?
Great question. The role of woman will go wherever the need is, and that's kind of a loose answer, but I don't ever hesitate. If a need is revealed or exposed, I'm not shy. I will go for it. I'm not afraid to take risks. I will do whatever I can do in my power to make something happen, just see it happening. I do see in the near future, you know, the chapter program continuing to grow, and really, it really is a movement that we're seeing, and I see that to continue. I'm really focused on two things this year. One is to engage women politically. It is so important. And so that is kind of on my to-do list, as well as moving women from the early stages of training and moving them deeper. So whether that's through competitive shooting, we now sponsor a women's team. So we have six women across the country that are competitive shooters that we sponsor, kind of as ambassadors out there, if you will, and help women move deeper into more defensive tactical training. So we're going to see some things in that realm with the Well-Armed Woman.
And are you planning on coming out with a book?
I do have one book that I've written. I've actually have been taking some notes and kind of thinking about a second book. The first book is really a concise guide for concealed carry. So for women who want to conceal carry, it takes them through every thought, even, you know, using the restroom with a concealed carry gun. So we cover everything in that. But I am working on some thoughts for something maybe a little bit more along the social side, women and guns, political side. So we'll see. We'll see. Something will come.
Carrie, we're going to have to put a plug in the jug here. I've got the land surveying show coming on very shortly. I want to thank you very much for being on. And if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to have you back on again in the near future.
It was my absolute pleasure. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I would love to come back.
And again, we thank you, and we look forward to I'll talk to you later this afternoon. Got some ideas.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Thank you, Carrie.
Dan, I thought that Carrie did an excellent job, and you know, I think that women, I hope a lot of women were listening to this and will tell their friends about it. It's an outstanding program, and you said we have 12 locations in Atlanta, I believe you said? Dan?
Yeah. There's about five chapters that circle Portland, so, you know, there's 220 chapters out there.
Well,
great organization.
You know, once again, this has been a super show, and we'll definitely, in my opinion, we'll have Carrie back and talking more about the Well-Armed Woman. With that being said, the check's in the mail to cover that large bet that we had, and I thought Denver, and I'm very pleased that Denver won, and I look forward to hopefully Peyton will play another year.
Well, thank you, Dave. You're a very gracious loser. You are a loser, but you're very gracious.
Well, you got to be something some way or the other. Anyway, we're going to put the plug in the jug for the Dan and Dave show. Dan, thank you as always, and I'm sure we'll talk later. And we want everybody to stay tuned for the NSPS Hour only on America's Web Radio. We'll be back after this.